Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 518, Science Faction, Energy from Algae. I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, how are you doing this afternoon?
I am doing great, and I don't mean to cheat algae out of their rightful introduction. We all know when we mention algae, that's like it's essentially like the fart joke of science. Ripe ground for comedy. Algae.
Yeah, I mean, when you start thinking of all the things algae gives us with their photosynthesis and the delicious algae beverages we all enjoy, it's hard not to get excited about algae.
I get hard for algae when I think of potential biofuels, biodiesels that we can get with it. Like, oh my God, man. Like, oh man, powering our nation's fighting force Humvees with fucking algae. Man, I am torqued right now. Fucking torqued.
First of all, Damian, don't go blow your proverbial algae load this early. We still got a lot of algae talk.
I'm sorry. I'm actually going to take a nap. I'm a little sleepy right now.
I'll tell you what, I'll go down on the episode later.
Oh, dear. And we have been doing our Patreon, which has been fantastically successful. I'm so excited that this is going well. I did not expect it to go nearly as well. And for all you people out there who think you're just supporting dick jokes, yeah, it's 90% dick joke support. But 10% support is still going to science education. You are literally helping thousands of people around the world learn about the published science articles of that week and dick jokes, which I think is a great combination. What I would say is you are the Medici, so to speak. Like we say the name patron or from Patreon, like, oh, you're a patron, but, or you're a patron, but like you are literally like the Medicis supporting, you know, Da Vinci and Michelangelo and stuff. You are bringing science to the world with your support. And in fact, some of the stuff we are going to be using this for, some of the reasons we wanted to start raising money was because we want to bring scientists back to the show. We don't want to have to wait until this all blows over and we can get back into a studio together. So I literally have to put together like a laptop and nice microphone and software and everything that I can then mail to scientists like Dr. Troy or Bill to then do it from their home. And so this is going to be a steep upfront cost. And then we're going to need the cost to get back into a studio once everything gets started because all that equipment and stuff is gone. So all of you people out there who are donating, and we now have quite a few patrons, thank you so much. Thank you for supporting science. And for those of you guys who have not done that, if you are able to, please go ahead and check out our Patreon page. You can find under either Robert Timothy or Science Faction, depending on how you are looking. And when you do that, you will see we have pretty kick-ass reward tiers, like starting at a very low level, at a level where we lose money. You start getting sweet merch, you get like sweet shirts and stuff at a low money. And as I said last time, just to throw it in, because we think anybody who is supporting us and supporting science should live through all of this, even at the very lowest level, the lowest level of merch, where we're sending you out some stickers, you still get free I Call BS every week, you still get to decide which bit we're going to do on Thursdays, you are also going to get some complimentary KN95 respirators, because I want you motherfuckers to survive this pandemic.
I thought you were sending them sweet K&N air filters or something, but... That's horsepower on your car. That'll pay for itself, big guy.
And gas mileage. And plus, you know, you got to replace that air filter, you know, if you're going to factory spec every 10 to 15,000 miles anyway. So by the end, that reusable K&N that you just wash and reuse over and over again, that just saves you money in terms of air filters.
I have two things I want to mention. First off,
one should be that K&N air filter should sponsor this podcast.
Bobby, that's if we want to really shoot to the top of the iPod iTunes game, podcast game. Yeah, let's start shooting out some K&N air filters. I'm sure we can get into a partnership with them. We're the only podcast that gives you gas mileage and horsepower. Insert Tim the Toolman Taylor barking noise right there. But secondly, first off, thank you for calling our patrons the Medicis. And yes, our patrons also have a lot of dark secrets, but that's not for us. But I think we should have, this wouldn't be like a thing that went out to a fan, but let's just say like if we got to 10,000 patron subscribers or make it some other measure of success, dollar amount, whatever.
Uh-huh.
Bobby and I will, for example, kick the shit out of Andrew Wakefield. We will wait for him outside of his home. But if we can get to a certain number, Bobby and I will do more for science through one act of criminality, vandalism, or justice. Yeah.
Now, let's be honest, though. I mean, Wakefield, he's got a lot of bad things going for him. He's older. He at least used to be a physician, and he's British. So, like, all of those mean that either one of us could take him on our own quite easily. I don't think we need to pay two airfares to England to make this happen, Damien.
Okay, then never mind. What we do is we lock him out of his home, and we're like the kid from Home Alone. We're Kevin McAllister inside of his house, and we booby-trap the shit out of him. Of course, we don't really cover that in that movie, that child would have murdered two adult men.
That's true. Yeah, a lot of therapy. They didn't factor that into Home Alone 2 or 3. And of course, we want to thank our Patreons. We're going to list our Patreons as they come in, by the order they come in. And we're not going to just list a whole shitload like they do on other podcasts, because we actually appreciate ours. So it's only 3 per episode. And our 4th patron to ever come in was, of course, Superfan Dwayne. I'm sure he's pissed he wasn't 1, 2, or 3, but Superfan Dwayne had to be in there, which I've now given him the badass nickname, because he's not only Superfan Dwayne, he's also a patron. So he's now Superfan Dwayne, or Dwayne the Rock Kiwi.
I love that image of Superfan Dwayne where he has a fanny pack and like a black turtleneck. Just looks like a 1990s New York guy, like real Samoan and everything, or Maori. I'm sorry, he's from New Zealand.
Oh, indeed. And of course, Andrew Lindsay also got in there as our 5th patron, and John Washmuth. John, I hope I pronounced your name wrong. I hope I pronounced your name right.
Wow, fuck you, John.
Oh,
I guess.
Oh yeah. He didn't even get one of those sweet The Rock names. So.
Wow. I listen, John, I want you to know that I respect you. I don't know what Bobby's beef with you is, but like, I appreciate everything you do for the show.
Oh, dear. Okay, we're going to have to paper, rock, scissors on which one of us is getting on that British Airways flight to go beat the shit out of Wakefield if we go at this rate. So you guys keep supporting us so we can go out there and, you know what? Let's not just beat him up. Let's give him measles, too.
You know what? What if our fans like got together and what if they said The Undertaker? Or something. Like, somebody has nothing to do with science. They just want to see us, I guess, record from a body cast. I don't know.
The two of us could absolutely. I don't know how old The Undertaker is. I haven't watched wrestling since I was like 10, but I feel like he's got to be. He was there when I was around. He's got to be like 55 right now, and we're pretty big dudes. Like, I'm pretty sure the two of us could take. He also doesn't know he's fighting. Like, right? He's just walking down the street.
Still like a 7-foot-tall old guy who has been working out. The WWE's training schedule's insane. They're on the road working out and like throwing around big dudes. And you're under us. Yes, it is an act.
We will go for the knees, we will cut him down, chop block, and then go after him.
All right, fans, you want to see Bobby and I go toe-to-toe with The Undertaker while he's trying to take his kids or grandkids out for a meal? We need for you to go to Patreon and subscribe.
Oh, this is going to be excellent. I like everything that's going on. All right, let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
All right, article number 1, energy from algae.
All right, we're back to that hot-ass bioluminescent algae. Let's break it down, turn it into a biodiesel, and let's get more power.
So we have talked about, you know, using algae to produce energy in a certain way before, as Damien is kind of alluding to right now. We talked about how the biotech revolution is going to change the way we produce power. One promising route that is going on right near us that we've talked about a lot is Craig Venter's company that is basically engineering algae to produce things like diesel fuel. So each one of these little algae cells will actually be filling itself up with a synthetic form, essentially, of diesel fuel that's generated by solar light, by the way. So the plant photosynthesizing, it's creating this biodiesel using sunlight and ingesting the CO2 from around it. So it's actually, you do emit CO2 when you burn it, but it's essentially a carbon neutral source because it absorbs CO2 from the air when it's photosynthesizing, and then it outputs it later when you burn it. So while you are technically outputting carbon when you do it, it is carbon neutral in that sense. A very cool technology. It's about 10 years in the making. Really, really neat stuff. The idea that you would have these giant mats of algae in your backyard, and then you would just hook your car up to it and fuel it up is really, really neat.
So I could roll coal guilt-free.
Yes, you no longer have to feel bad about covering that Prius in a bunch of unburned fuel, which, by the way, is costing. Every time you roll coal, it costs like $5 into the gas tank. And it fucks up your exhaust system. Like, it's bad all around for everything.
And, like, you're really not enjoying anything in a tangible way. Like, you're essentially just doing something to somebody's car that has no permanent damage, that just, oh my God, there's a cloud I have to drive through for a second. Oh, this is way better than fog.
But
A new paper out of China suggests that we could actually use algae to make fuel in a totally different way, one that's a lot more exciting for a few reasons. But this would produce not diesel fuel, but hydrogen. So how does this work? Normally, these algae cells, a species called Chlorella
deville. Chlorella deville.
Pyranosa dosa.
I heard this strain of algae tried to make a coat out of 101 different strains of bacteria.
You know, it's funny you bring that up because we will talk about some bacteria in this. And it is kind of a coat, actually. That's kind of odd. So,
I'm a scientist.
Like any plant cells, this algae takes in sunlight and CO2 to make its energy, and its byproduct is oxygen. But what the researchers found is if they take those cells and they dip them in dextran and then in polyethylene glycol, it created this barrier where one is they've now switched it from producing oxygen to producing hydrogen as long as there's no atmospheric oxygen touching it. And so they first aided the dextran and then the polyethylene glycol kind of creates this boundary around it. And the algae in the middle is now still using that same cycle, that same photosynthetic cycle, except because they're taking in something different and they don't have any oxygen touching the outside, it produces hydrogen instead of oxygen. Very, very cool. They then found that if they added a layer of bacteria around it, similar to a Chlorella deville coat, if you will, they could not only completely block out the oxygen from the outside, but any of the cells inside that didn't get switched over by the dextran, like they didn't touch it enough and it's still photosynthesizing, they eat up the oxygen that it produces so as to keep it constantly producing hydrogen instead of oxygen. And what they are producing is essentially tiny droplet-sized hydrogen production factories that you could just ramp up. You could make, you know, millions and millions of these. You could have a whole vat of them constantly producing hydrogen for you. That is really cool for a few reasons. Now, you might say, why is hydrogen so important? Diesel makes sense. You know, a lot of trucks run on diesel. What about hydrogen? Well, you can actually modify a standard internal combustion engine to run on hydrogen, but that is not likely why this would be a big deal.
He's running one of them fuel cell cars, like an scientist.
That's exactly correct. So we have something called a hydrogen fuel cell. And the chemistry of this is very simple, which is when you combine hydrogen and oxygen, and by the way, this isn't like an energetic process. You just put hydrogen and oxygen near each other and they will combine on their own. That puts out two byproducts. One is a little bit of electricity, and two is water vapor. And so there is a thing called a hydrogen fuel cell car. Some companies have actually made some. So BMW experimented. They made a hydrogen fuel cell 7 series. There's a few others around, but since it's hard to fuel up on hydrogen, there's not a lot of stands around. It's not super popular. You can make hydrogen yourself very easily. In fact, all you have to do is run electricity through water and you can produce hydrogen. Now, as you can see though, hydrogen isn't a fuel source the way we think of like gasoline as a fuel source. It is a battery. It is a storage capacity because it takes the electricity to separate the water into hydrogen and oxygen. And then, you know, it comes back together and gives it to you. So it is a way to store electricity very, very efficiently. But if these little algae are sitting there pumping out a bunch of hydrogen, well, they've done the work for us. The work is being done photosynthetically by them sitting in the sun and charging themselves up. And then when we later combined the hydrogen with free oxygen in the environment, we get a little electric spark. And the only thing that's coming out of that tailpipe is water vapor. That is really cool. It can be used to power things like cars, things like trains, buses, planes, but it can also be used in larger situations as, for instance, power supply reserves. So instead of, think of like a generator you might have now, right? Something goes in a hospital, the power goes out, diesel generators in the basement kick on. Well, imagine instead of that, you just have a bunch of hydrogen laying around and the power goes out. And instead of something kicking on with a whole bunch of noise, a hydrogen fuel cell just begins to produce electricity. That is, one, great because you don't have to have exhaust ports. You're not putting a bunch of carbon in the air. You don't have a bunch of diesel tanks sitting in the basement of a building for years waiting for a blackout to happen. And you essentially just have a constant clean battery source. And so there's this idea of a hydrogen economy or a hydrogen energy economy where in the future, instead of things like gasoline, our unit of energy transport may well be hydrogen, which can not only be in that liquid form, it can be in a gaseous form and be sent across fuel lines, you know, like the ones that we now put gasoline and oil in. You could put hydrogen through there, and there's a couple of great advantages. Number one, it's really light, so it's easy to push, so it doesn't take a lot of energy to get it where you want to go. You could produce hydrogen in big numbers in certain areas and then send it to places. And then guess what? If there's a leak, a hydrogen leak
doesn't really do much to the environment. Again, it's going to combine with free oxygen in the atmosphere and just create water. So the worst thing that's going to happen is you'll have a puddle underneath that leak, as opposed to thousands of gallons of oil spilling into our water supplies.
Isn't hydrogen the only real disadvantage, that hydrogen just explodes a bit better than diesel?
Yes, hydrogen does explode, but guess what? Diesel also explodes. So does gasoline. That's kind of one of the things about those things.
Does diesel explode? Because you got to compress it, whereas gasoline,
yes.
Gasoline lights
true.
Explodes. I thought diesel it light, but don't you got to compress it for it to...
Yeah, usually the type of diesel that we use for our current fuel stuff like has an octane that it compression is what we use to kind of make it go.
I remember 1930 strongmen used to compress diesel till it exploded, yes. And that was their...
But I mean, still, if you have a huge diesel spill, it's pretty gross. Like, it does a lot of damage to the environment around it, and it's not good for you, and it's not good for you to be around burning diesel either, and that stuff is around all the time. So, like, you know, hydrogen would be a much cleaner source. Even when you burn it, it is much, much cleaner. You don't even have to burn it to get the energy out of it. You just combined it with oxygen in the air, and then all of a sudden you get electricity and water. Really, really, really cool stuff. I've been waiting for the hydrogen economy since I really studied it pretty in depth in college. And like, honestly, if you would have told me in like 2004, like, hey, 2020, what do you think is going to be? I'd be like, every car is going to be on hydrogen. At least half of them. Sure, we'll have some classic cars rolling around, but every new car is going to be on hydrogen. Now, it's almost right in that we went lithium ion batteries instead and doing electricity, and we're kind of getting there. But I would have thought a lot more hydrogen, and I still think hydrogen has a big place in the future.
Sound like a child who read a bunch of science books, but didn't read how government works and how subsidies work and how oil companies work.
Well, but that's the thing. Like, if you would have told me, even in like 2004, and this was, you know, before we had discovered as much natural gas in America, before we had discovered that we had bigger oil reserves in America and stuff, I would have thought, well, look how much energy independence we'll have. We make our own fuel. You know, we have a bunch of solar cells hooked up to hydrogen factories. They produce hydrogen. Our cars run on hydrogen. And then we don't have to worry about wars in the Middle East, right? This was 2004. You don't have to worry about wars in the Middle East because we won't need oil, because who cares what's going on? We have hydrogen, and that's how our economy works.
Three words, Bobby. Drill, baby, drill. I know. Now, we live in a world where politics turns over, but I remember like that was a saying people used to
yes,
say.
It literally was. If only they were like, separate water into hydrogen and oxygen, hydrogen and oxygen, hydrogen and oxygen.
You gotta have baby at the front and the back in order to talk down to America.
It has other advantages over things like the lithium ion batteries we currently use, which is, as I'm sure you guys are aware, the start life of lithium ion batteries is pretty harsh. We have a lot of like African slaves mining it to get some of that stuff. And then the end life is pretty harsh in that right now we don't have a good recyclable system for all of these battery types. We're getting better at it, but it's still not 100%. And so you have some heavy metal contamination left over at the end. At the end of this, again, we get water. And we get electricity. And so, you know, there isn't this horrible battery stuff. Now, there might be a few things in the catalysts that we make it, but I think that still is like platinum and palladium and stuff. So I still don't even think you have real heavy metal waste at the end of this. So there is some advantages, not only over internal combustion engines, gasoline and diesel and stuff, there's advantages over the current electric models that we use. There are some disadvantages too. Hydrogen is 3 times as powerful as gasoline, but 9 times less dense. And so volume-wise, you need 3 times as much volume in any given tank to hold as much energy as you do with gasoline when you're using hydrogen. But my argument is that's not a big deal. As we were seeing with the electric car revolution, is once you get rid of engines and stuff and you just have a few electric motors and stuff like that, you actually free up a lot of space. That entire engine compartment is essentially free in Teslas, right? And so, you know, you build a skateboard platform that is 3 times the size of your average gas tank, which is 12 gallons, and you get a 36-gallon, you know, hydrogen tank that's there. That is not really a deal breaker in all of this. So there are some downsides, but they're really small compared to the upsides.
It'll take that much longer to fill up at the gas station. You'll be waiting for 30 minutes for the asshole who's on his phone the whole time, isn't paying attention. It stopped pumping a bit ago, and like he hasn't noticed.
Well, actually, I wonder if it would probably go much faster because it's as a less dense fluid or gas, it would have less viscosity. So I believe it would actually go much faster into the thing. So it might even out. I'd have to do we'd have to get, you know, get me a good person, Bill. Bill does fluid dynamics. We'll get Bill and ask him how this will work.
Yeah, well, he prefers me anyway, so I'll ask him.
yeah, you know, you didn't go to his alma mater. You're not really a science guy. You don't get his yoga heat thing. You know, he really likes me a lot more.
Yeah, he drops into my DMs way more than yours. And, you know, we haven't exactly compared on this, but yeah, let's go Bill Dick Pick for Bill Dick Pick, and let's see who he likes more. You're a married man. I got a leg up.
He sends me special ones, like his dick dressed up for Halloween.
I saw that in Vampire, right? So clever. Where he put the teeth was, you know, I'm not going to ruin it. I'll post it. I'll tweet it out to the fans.
On to article number two. What's up with Beetlejuice?
Well, I mean, he's a parent. His job is he's a bio exterminator. He's living out there on the edge of space, played delightfully by Michael Keaton.
I'm sorry, Damien. Beetlejuice is actually a red supergiant about 20 times the mass of our sun, and it's nearing the end of its life. It's about 500 light years from Earth, and it is one of those easily visible stars with the naked eye. In fact, you can go up and see it because it's part of the Orion constellation, and it's so prominent we use it to kind of like point out other stars to people and stuff.
And it was a star that really helped Tim Burton's career early on. And I feel like it was Beetlejuice, that star, and the star Edward Scissorhands that really made Tim Burton a name and eventually made Johnny Depp a name.
And Alec Baldwin. and it's actually the sixth brightest star in our night sky. We talked a little bit about the Beetlejuice drama over the past year or so. This started in 2019. We brought this up on this show when it happened. And we started noticing that it was dimming, which was especially interesting because some of its actions seem to mimic what we believe to be the beginnings of a supernova. Beetlejuice is kind of near the end of its life, though not really where we would expect it to actually be blowing up. It's probably got 100,000 years or so left. But this was really exciting to a lot of astronomers. I actually remember, because it was 2019, back when the world was back the way it was supposed to be. It was in the end of 2019. I remember going to an event at the nearby Science Museum in the Reuben H. Fleet and went to their big IMAX dome theater. And they actually had the night sky up and they were showing Beetlejuice and they were showing the dimming. And all of these astronomers were speculating on what was going on. Now, most astronomers thought it wasn't going to go supernova, but a couple of them actually did. A couple of them were like, yeah, this might be the big thing, which would be a big deal because it's only about like 3 or 4 stars per century that we observe go supernova. The last one was in the late 80s. And so to have one go supernova, especially one so close to us, would be a really neat thing. It would probably be like the size of the moon in the sky at night.
For how long?
I don't know. And I, to be honest,
like
I don't know if they know.
Like it'd have snakes coming out the side too. Like, and they'd be singing that banana song.
You know, there's a great story of, obviously it led to horrible genocide, but like when Columbus was getting, the natives were routing against him in like Hispaniola or something. And they seemed like they were about to like basically say, fuck this guy, let's kill him on one of his expeditions. One of the ways he tamed everybody is he had had a star chart that conveniently predicted an eclipse that was about to come. And he basically said, you better do what I say. Otherwise, God's going to get so mad. He's going to take the sun away in the middle of the day tomorrow. And they laughed him off. And then it happened, of course, because an eclipse happened. And then all of a sudden, history changed because these natives helped him build his boats or do whatever and get back to where he was. And so he actually used astronomy to help commit genocide, but used it to help trick people. I think we could do that if we knew Beetlejuice was going supernova with like really dumb people who lived east of us. Like we could just go like, hey, give me all your skull and lifted trucks. Otherwise, I'm going to make a second moon in the sky explode in the middle of the night tomorrow. And then when it happens, we're lousy with their sisters and their poor teeth.
Never vote again. That is the only requirement. Fuck your sisters. Double down on the skull. Lift your truck 3 times so that it's comically high and that you can't go under freeway underpasses. I don't care. Stop voting or the sun goes.
But it was funny because like some astronomers were like watching this star incredibly excited, like, oh shit, this might be the beginning of the supernova. But even as it was happening, not even in hindsight, even as it was happening, other astronomers were like, oh, those guys are noobs getting pwned by a big star named after Tim Burton's worst movie. Fuck those guys. I don't know what they're doing.
Tim Burton's worst movie? Okay. He's had a lot of crap.
That one didn't have DeVito.
Okay, I'll agree with you, but that's, you know what, that is simultaneously a great thermometer and a bad thermometer, and I respect it.
So anyway, after a couple of months of watching it, it eventually in 2020 started to return to its original brightness. And there are two main hypotheses about what happened. One is that either the star was ejecting a big cloud of stuff that then blocked the light from getting to us because there's a cloud of stuff in front of it, or there was some kind of other thing that could have been either unknown star cycles, a giant sunspot, or a lovably acted Michael Keaton related reason. But we're not sure 100% on what it might be yet.
Birdman? Birdman was involved?
No, Batman.
Trying to think of other Michael Keaton movies. Multiplicity? Multiplicity was involved?
So here's the interesting thing. This question as to what actually caused this, we now know it's not going supernova, but what is it? Is it ejecting gas? Is it a sunspot? Is it a star cycle? What is it? That question should have actually been solved by now. Researchers put together a protocol to figure out exactly how to do that. They found the right telescope. It was the Atacama one down in South America in the desert. They found the right time of year to do it, how to take the measurements. And they're like, basically all we have to do is take these measurements and we could figure this out. Done and done. We'll have this mystery solved. And then COVID came down and it shut the facilities down during the necessary time of observation that we would have had to see what was going on. And now we're left waiting for Winona Ryder to sweep in and give us the final answer.
You know, you've really dropped the hammer as far as Beetlejuice references.
I know. It's ironic because I've never seen the movie, but I did look it up on Wikipedia.
It's a surprisingly good movie. And it's interesting that you bring it up because there's talks of a sequel coming out.
So. Oh, interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
You know, as far as Tim Burton, whether you like him or love him, Beetlejuice is solid. It's a quirky, fun watch anytime movie.
All right, thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction 518, where you learned all about how we're going to be getting energy from algae and what's up with Beetlejuice. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back later this week for Science Faction 519.
It was Tim Burton's movie Edward Algae Hands. That was fucking gross.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.